Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Take Cast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter, at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my old friend, Matt Birnbach. He is a longtime guy in the DFS space. He used to work for Draft Street, then was an employee of DraftKings, and is now going to be transitioning his attention towards the betting space with a company that should be launching soon called BetHouse. And, you know, why I wanted to have Matt on the show was I kind of love talking about the history of DFS, the history of DraftKings, how the space has evolved, how sports betting has changed the space, and you know, Matt has a lot of firsthand experience in how the sports betting and the DFS industry has changed, and also has a lot of good anecdotes from his time at DK, and we kind of pulled the curtain behind there a little bit. So I hope that you guys enjoy the episode. If you want to support the show, we've been doing a lot of bonus episodes over on patreon.com/takecast. Or you can leave a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's go ahead and get to the show. All right, everyone. Welcoming in my buddy, Matt Birnbach. He used to work for DraftKings.com and is going to be launching a new, or is part of the launch of a new betting-centric website. And we'll definitely be able to talk more about that website definitely in the future. But Matt and I have known each other for a long time now. I think we probably met, I would guess, 2014 at one of the Vegas live finals back then. So excited to have you on the show, bud.
No, I'm happy to be here. I talk every now and then, and I said, you know, I listen to the Takecast, and I'm a fan. So it's cool to be first time, long time on here. I think we probably met around 2014. I feel like it was at an event where I think it was like Al or someone introduced me to you. And I was just like, I have no idea who this person is, but everyone else knew you. And I was like, well, I guess I need to know you. And I guess my intentions were wrong, but it still worked out.
Yeah. Anyone who knows me, I mean, it's just people who are critically online, like their brains have been busted by being online so much. That's basically my claim to fame. So
act like you belong, you know?
Oh, I mean, that's truly what I'm best at. Like walking into FSTA, like, oh, yep, I'm here. It's all there. Exactly. Or being at the live finals and being like, oh yeah, no, totally. Like I'm totally meant to be here. I mean, that is always served me well. That's just like, a good life lesson.
Where is my swag bag? Exactly.
Yes, that is like another great thing that I've learned in my many interactions with you and your former coworkers is you do not get things if you don't ask for them, right? 100%. Like I threw out this first pitch for the Royals game because like that was something that became obvious and it would never have happened if I wasn't like, oh yeah, no, like let's totally push this. So there's exactly a good life lesson to start out the show. You're not going to get things if you don't ask for them.
Exactly. So
we're going to talk about a lot of stuff on this show, but I definitely want to start here because I find this fascinating from an industry perspective. And no, of course, no one really knows the question, like, what are all of these DFS-based companies going to become 5 years from now as sports betting becomes legal, becomes the forefront? You know, what is going to happen? But what I think is very interesting, and I don't think there's a ton of public-facing information about this, is what it was like inside these large DFS companies as the UIGEA and the Wire Act got rewritten and repealed. Like, do you remember the conversations inside of DK as that was becoming apparent?
Yeah, so, you know, there was no talk about, turning into a sports betting giant or any of that, certainly 2014, 2015, 2016, but I do remember, or maybe it was late 2016, early 2017, and pretty much I think it was at an all hands meeting that it was discussed, like, you know, when the tides turn here and sports betting becomes legal, you know, DraftKings will be ready to go. So that was the first time we had heard that anyone was working on any kind of tech. Still don't know, like, you know, how many people were devoted to it and things like that, but it was about a year ahead of time. And maybe I'm, you know, off by a few months, but certainly it felt like a year ahead of time where we were told for the first time, like, we think things are making progress. And when, you know, things are repealed, whether that's a year from now, 3 years from now, whatever, we're going to be ready to flip the switch on when they tell us to. So yeah, there wasn't much outside of that, but that was certainly the first time it had ever been openly spoken about.
Which is interesting, because I would guess that when DraftKings and FanDuel were, you know, going through their, like, the fantasy wars, which people at this point barely even remember, right?
No
the,
idea. Yeah.
Yeah, the battle for customer acquisition. You could not watch a sporting event without DK and FanDuel commercials. It was everywhere. I mean, you know, normie people who were sports watchers were getting exposed to it. You know, all of this stuff was happening. That was not a battle for sports betting customers. That was a battle for DFS customers, who are way less profitable than sports betting customers, by the way. Like, I just thinking back on it, it's crazy to me that all that money was spent back then on
$200 million in TV ads during a summer between the two companies. And, you know, I remember at the, and I don't know if you were there, I think it was the live of the kickoff party in Miami. And the entire Sunday, it was the, I think it was the DirecTV Red Zone channel, not the other Red Zone channel. And FanDuel had to deal with that, the DirecTV one. So every commercial break or anything was that was all FanDuel at this DraftKings party. It was very amusing.
Yeah, but that was how everything was. Like, all of these things were sponsored. Your favorite sports podcast was doing DraftKings ad reads. Like, that was just the environment that was going on back then, it's crazy to think about, because obviously these companies are spending loads of money in customer acquisition now, but they're doing it in a much different way. It's like more targeted, more regional and things like that. But like, I mean, what was the environment like during kind of that crazy, I want to say like, had to have been like 2015-ish, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was, look, it was crazy because, you know, every few days we would be sent, I think on like the company-wide Slack, you'd be getting videos of here's the next, you know, commercial coming out. And there were so many different variations. Obviously, I think the first DraftKings commercial everyone remembers is the, you know, it was at the, like, they were at like the museum and you had the guy with the money in the shorts and everything like that. And people thought that was cringeworthy. And then, you know, even to this day, when I talk to people and say, you know, where I started, and they'll discuss the summer of commercials, you know, it was just one of those things where you couldn't escape it. And even, I don't want to speak for everyone, but even for like employees, it was just like almost cringeworthy. You turn on the TV and, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel just vomited all over your TV, you know, every 2 minutes. It was certainly exciting though, that, you know, being at, you know, a startup that was growing so fast and FanDuel too, you know, it clearly showed that, you know, the growth was going to be crazy. But he still, even at that point, I don't think the majority of us were thinking sports betting. It was purely, you know, DFS, and the fact that we were spending all this money on this daily fantasy product was crazy.
Well, actually, and we can, for very interesting stuff, we can go back even further, because this is, again, definitely something that people listening to this show would not remember. But FanDuel was like the primary entity, like 2012, 2013, 2014. FanDuel was so much bigger, had the much larger prize pools, had way more players. Like, when you tuned on, when you tuned in to Roto Grinders for your favorite show, it would be FanDuel salaries, FanDuel roster construction.
And if anything, I mean, second place was where I was prior to DraftKings was Draft Street. You know, they were the, you know, a close second place at that point. And then obviously DraftKings acquired us. So that kind of started DraftKings like ascent to the top.
So actually, yeah, let's go into that Draft Street merger. I mean, what ended up happening there? And you know, they had the Draft Day acquisition as well, which was very similar. But like, basically the all of the powers that be at DraftKings were just, it was so fueled on aggressive growth. Like, it was, they were very, very aggressive bets. But like, in terms of like business lessons to be learned, it is kind of insane how DraftKings was able to enter it. Like, they were in like a 90-10 market share. Yeah. And I mean, now, like, you know, it's basically been flipped.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at Draft Street, there was about, I think there's like 12 or 13 of us. And what happened was in 2013, Draft Street got bought out. I don't know the percentage wise, but by a company called Interactive Corp. They own all these like online dating sites, College Humor, Christian Mingle, all these fun sites that people, you know, Farmers Only, things like that. And for whatever reason, they wanted to get involved in fantasy sports. And I think what happened was, you know, 10 months later, they realized they did not want to be involved in fantasy sports. And, you know, I wasn't privy to all of these conversations, but, you know, sure. In short, what happened was they, instead of, you know, going to the team at Draft Street at that point, the four founders who were all still there and saying, you know, we don't want to do this anymore. Like, let's find a way out. Beneath them more or less gave them a week to go find someone. Otherwise they were selling to DraftKings, who at that point, I think there was a mutual respect for FanDuel, but there was like a disgust for DraftKings, only because out of nowhere, this company was, you know, having these very big sizing contests that were seemingly, maybe they weren't always filling, but they were certainly breaking even on. And we were all just very surprised where this was all coming from. You know, there were usernames we had never seen before. We would track usernames on all the sites, you know, to make sure, not to make sure, but to make sure that, you know, the wallet was spread evenly, or at least if we could have some kind of wallet share for some of the big guys. And then you'd see, you know, players dumping in, you know, 150 entries, 300 entries into DraftKings in the final 5 minutes that we never heard of. And it was just like an anger coming from our side. So I know when DraftKings came and acquired us, it was not like it was almost like a funeral. It was like the worst thing that could have possibly happened at that time. Things, right. I think, worked out for a lot of people. But at that point, being acquired for what in your head at least was, you know, your biggest enemy, it was not a fun time for sure.
No, and that's how kind of everyone viewed them in the space at the time. Like even the content providing sites did not have a great handle on what DK was going to be, because it was so aggressive. Like if you were not the kind of there in the space of the time, it's very hard to explain what it was like. Like there was a time in Daily Fantasy where there was like eight sites you could play on, right? You know, yeah. Star Street, Draft Street, yeah. FanDuel, Daily Joust, just all of these different sites. And, you know, who knows how long that business model and that competition model could have existed had DK not so aggressively entered in the space. And you know, they did a lot of different things very well. I do think, I mean, the contest sizing and the fact that they were willing to eat so much overlay was part of it. You know, they always were very good at like gamifying. I mean, that to me, I think, is what DraftKings has done the best, is gamifying and adding layers on top. The missions, the crowns, their original like VIP program and stuff, like all of those things were just head and shoulders above all the other companies.
You know, DraftKings was, you know, us at Draft Street and FanDuel did not have NASCAR, did not have golf at that point, because we believed, or the lawyers believed, that, you know, it was one event that we couldn't possibly run that. The idea was you need to have more than one event, or more team, you know, three or four teams in a daily fantasy in order to run it. And DraftKings, you know, hired either more aggressive lawyers, or they would just say, F the lawyers, and we're just going to try this anyway. And next thing you know, they have NASCAR, they have golf, and all these other things. And, you know, eventually everyone followed suit. But they kind of, you know, pushed the envelope on a lot of things. And just to go back on, you know, that Draft Street thought that FanDuel was more of that DraftKings was like more of the bigger competitor, was when, you know, there was a FSWA seat up for grabs. I don't know what it means, but like being on the board, and the CEO of Draft Street, Brian Schwartz, the CEO of at the FanDuel at the time, Nigel, and Jason Robbins from DraftKings were all vying for the seat. And I don't remember if it was Brian from Draft Street who dropped out to give his vote to Nigel, or Nigel dropped out to give his vote to Brian, but they wanted to make sure it was one of those two on the seat. They did not want Jason to have the seat, just because they didn't like what was going on, or maybe didn't like, but didn't, maybe they were afraid of him, whatever it was. But they wanted to make sure Jason did not have that seat on the podium.
Yeah. And I mean, cause that does show like They were the disruptor, to use like 2021 language,
yeah.
Right? Like,
it's word, but it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. All the ads you see on Instagram, you know, we're disrupting the mattress industry. We're disrupting the vitamin supplement industry.
You'll never sleep the same way again. Exactly.
Exactly. But that is what DraftKings was. They were the disruptor. And it was it was a super nascent industry. I mean, DFS as a thing really is only about a decade old.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, which is insane. You know, it feels like my entire adult life has been wrapped up in this activity. And at the same time, like, DFS is clearly already kind of like viewed as an old fashioned thing inside of the world of wagering, because the margins for DFS, the way that you make money, it is you have to have so many more customers to make money running DFS contests than you do to offer sports betting.
Yeah, you know, it was one of the things when we did become a sports book, and looking at it now, and a lot of people still don't understand, certainly when it was only DFS, you know, when somebody loses $100 in a contest, you know, they would reach out to support or to VIP if it was, you know, if they felt it was a bad beat or someone was hurt or whatever it is, you know, please refund me my money. And the response, you know, for the most part was, you know, we as a operator, we only take 10% of that. The rest goes out to like the prize pools, to the people who won those contests, obviously, as opposed to sports betting, where it's, you know, the company, the operator takes the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes we would refund, like, here's your operating fee. Here's the $9 we made off of you, but you're not getting a refund. You know, this is somebody who won this fair and square. So I still think, to this point, I'm still every now and then explaining, like, that's the difference. I don't think everyone fully understands that, you know, the operator, when there's that famous basketball game in Mexico City that got fired out or whatever, right?
Wolves Spurs. I still remember it.
On the DFS side, when they refund or they do a free roll, whatever it is, for $500,000, that's, you know, and they're letting the other people keep the money, you know, that's $500,000 out of, you know, DraftKings or whoever's pocket. On the sports betting side, when a game is that happens, nothing happens. Everyone just gets their bets are voided. Nothing happens in the grand scheme of thing. The risk is not as much, you know, in terms of a rain out, a fire out, the roof of the Minnesota football stadium collapsing, whatever.
Yeah, that's actually pretty fascinating. Something I had like even forgot about is like, what is the decision-making process like? Like, where, what has to happen in an event? So like, great example, European championships. And you know, obviously you were not in the room anymore, but European championships, Christian Eriksen literally has a heart attack on the field. It was like this whole big thing. It wasn't clear if the game was going to continue. Wasn't clear if the game, like, where is the threshold for, okay, we are refunding this contest or we're not refunding this contest?
Yeah, well, I'll start by the way saying, obviously, I was not at DraftKings anymore. That was only a few weeks ago. But I was playing those contests, and I actually had Pierre Højbjerg, who's the midfielder who was more or less going to take over all of the stuff for him. So, you know, I had this sweat like everyone else, like, will this game continue? You know, usually in a thing like that, that's obviously an extreme circumstance. Had they not played the game again, my assumption is they would have refunded or certainly made everybody whole. So everyone would have been back to zero. If you were positive, you wouldn't have gotten anything out of it, to anyone who had anyone in that game. I think that's probably what would have been done. Like extreme circumstances like that, I think usually, you know, what they try to do is just make everybody whole. And if you got lucky enough to, even if you won a dollar, fine, we have to do nothing for you. You know, I think it's the age old thing where it's more expensive to acquire a new user than it is to keep a current user happy and on the board and on the site. So, you know, may as well take your lump for the day, you know, to make sure they keep playing after that. So something extreme like that, you know, I don't want to speak fully for what they would have done, but I'm pretty sure they would have made everybody whole who had at least one player on a team in that game.
Yeah. Which is like, that is, you know, it's very hard to draw that distinction because obviously like injuries happen in games all the time, right? And you can't, you can't be refunding a slate every time, you know, David Montgomery slips and hurts his knee in a game. And, you know, and they also have kind of set the precedent for themselves just by issuing refunds at all. And it's not like a sports bet where you say like, okay, pitcher must pitch the first pitch for action, right? Like it's not exactly one-to-one. The rules in sports betting are a little bit more clear. And with DFS, because the decision tree is so large, and especially for DraftKings with late swap, right? Like that's something that a customer can come in and say, and they can be like, oh, you know, I couldn't edit my contest, or I would have done this, or I would have done that. And so they really have set them. It's just a very, like the ombudsman at DraftKings or whatever has got to have, like, it's not a job that I would want to do because I just feel like it's very difficult.
I mean, it's also, you know, I think the hardest job at DraftKings is probably support team, because no matter what, you're getting crapped on, whether it's inside the company or it's certainly outside the company. I mean, the hours those guys put in, and just to get smoked by people online during the day. And obviously the very rare email they get, like, you know, you're doing a great job, right? They don't get that all that often. And when you, by coming out and being like, we're going to make everyone whole, it makes just everyone's lives so much easier, because they're doing enough stuff as is. If you're going to say we're not refunding anyone, the hundreds of thousands of inquiries they're getting in of just angry people, and then people threatening chargebacks and, you know, closing their account. And honestly, like, obviously, it's stupid. It's unfortunate to say, but like, someone writes in with a following of 25,000 people on Twitter that are all engaged. Like, the last thing DraftKings or FanDuel or anyone wants to see is this blue check mark now hating on the site that they're out of whatever, $500, $1,000, $5,000, because of something out of everyone's control. So all these things, you know, are thought about. I'm not saying someone with a blue check mark is going to get, you know, treated better, but it's also, it's definitely in the back of the mind if someone has a bit of a following, to where, you know, that's going to happen.
I mean, I will say I've emailed into DraftKings support literally hundreds of times. Well, maybe not hundreds, but at least 50 times I've emailed DraftKings support. And I have, first off, everyone there always does a great job. I have never had an issue where they're like, oh, we're just not going to help you. Like, I mean, I've had to do stuff from like getting tax documents to send to my mortgage broker. My crowns didn't claim right, like whatever. They've always been super helpful, but I also have never gotten special treatment just because, at least I don't think that I've gotten special treatment.
You're on the list of don't give special treatment to. There's a master list and you're on top of that. So everybody knows when you write in, there's a pop-up notification that says, just send them a macro back. Don't, you know, pretend you're a robot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. But like, that is interesting that you would say that though, because certainly like, the PR war is like very real, and like, you don't want CSU, right? For DK Pro, big check mark. You don't want him being like, DraftKings needs to make this right.
Cost to make him happy? If it's $100, like, it is so much, it's worth that than the absolute, you know, tweet storms we would get on, you know, when we removed NBA late swap, or when put NBA late swap back, things like that. Like, those are not fun to deal with at all for anyone. No one is happy about that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, oh my God, the late swap thing, dude, that was never something I could get myself to care about that much. Cause I mean, honestly, by the time that they did that, NBA DFS had gotten to the point to where it was very hard to win anyway, which is something that no one really talks about it publicly facing, but like NBA DFS, if you are a winner at NBA DFS, you are like the biggest mega mind ever, because the games are so hard.
Maybe the first month or so, or certainly maybe while at least NFL is going on, there's a chance of hanging in there. When NFL is done, you should just wait for baseball.
It's so hard.
Playing tennis, or do Champions League soccer, do anything else.
Yeah.
But it's also like, you know, one of the reasons they got rid of late swap to begin with in NBA is just the amount of customer support tickets they would normally get in.
The late swap.
Yeah, because by removing late swap at 7:01, customer support could focus on everything else. They don't have to worry about, you know, the 9 o'clock. Like, I did a mass upload and it didn't take, things like that. They're only worried about till 7. Obviously, you know, they went back to late swap, but that was one of the reasons behind it. And a lot of people just don't like, first of all, late swap in general is such a big, you know, the pros, the big players are utilizing it completely differently than, you know, if LeBron is injured, right? Everybody goes and makes the switch to, I don't know, Dame Lillard, whoever. The pros, though, are not just doing that. They're not making a like-for-like switch. They're making, like, a four-for-four switch, completely changing their team. And, you know, the regular people, the fish, if you will, aren't thinking that way. They're just thinking, I got screwed because I couldn't change LeBron.
Got to move my one guy.
Exactly. Yeah. It's also hard to tell someone like it all evens out in the long run. And it does, but it's also hard to tell someone who's out of, you know, they're $80 when 80 is a big deal to them that they're out $80. Like, you'll get it next time and they will, but like, maybe they won't play again.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we gotta, well, at least I'm very curious, cause I have never heard Ethan Gate stuff from someone who was there behind, but you know, I've heard it from out. So again, for people who don't know, which I'm sure there are people listening to this who were not there.
Like, who the fuck is Ethan?
Yeah, who the fuck is Ethan, right? So basically what happened is a DraftKings employee published an article on what was DK Nation back then.
I don't remember what it was called.
It wasn't DK Live, but it was something different back then. And they basically, this was at like the height of what we were just talking about, right? DK and FanDuel ads on your TV all the time. Huge prize pools. Your normie friends at school or at work asking you about DFS. And basically, Ethan published an article early that had ownership percentages from the late games, from the back end information. And then the same day, what he banked, what, 250K on FanDuel?
It was six figures, whatever it was.
So basically, if you can imagine this from someone from an outside perspective, basically it looks like this guy has inside information. He's playing on another site. He's predatorily using the ownership information. Like the optics of it were about as bad as it could possibly be. Now, I think probably, again, I don't know. I have always felt like there was not any malice in it. Like it was just kind of one of those things that happens in the world. But I would imagine that was like the worst and longest week in the history of DraftKings.
Yeah, well, I remember, well, first of all, besides banking, and I also think he had like five or six entries in the lower, like 30 places. Like his teams were more or less a disaster. Just one happened to just get really lucky.
Right.
Which is funny, like not that that changes a lot, but it's just funny that it's not like he went like 1, 9, 15, and 20. He went like 1, 75,000, 75,000 and 1. I remember going into work that, I don't remember if there was Monday night games at that point. So maybe it's either a Monday or Tuesday. I assume at this point they had removed the Monday games, maybe not.
I think that sounds right.
And the Roto Grinders thread was up to, I don't know, like 35 pages long. And I hadn't really thought of it as a big deal at that point. And then I saw the thread and I was like, oh no. Like, once you see any of those threads, right, on page 35, and it's not like about starting lineups in baseball, you're like, this is not good. And by lunchtime, it was up to like 100 pages. And, you know, there was a lot of people in the company who didn't understand what was going on. There was no malice at all there. You know, at least certainly outwardly, I'm assuming there was nothing there.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was pretty cool that they kept, you know, Ethan on.
For sure. I always thought that was a big, like, for me, yeah. I was like, that was the right thing for them to do.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I know, he's still there. You know, one thing they did, I think they took him out of the public eye, which was good. Like, you know, again, I don't think there was anything malicious behind it, but like get him, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And I think, you know, it was a rough few weeks for him. I from what I recall, like people found his, like, I don't know if he was living at home, but they found his parents' like phone number and were like, you know, threatening calls and all this stuff, like sick stuff. It was a very long week. And it was also, at some point, I feel like Chris Christie during like a presidential debate, I don't know if they talked exactly about Ethan Gate, but certainly talked about, you know, DFS. I don't remember if it stemmed from that or all the commercials, probably a combo of the two, but it was just crazy. Like this put DFS, this was almost like its real public moment when like, it wasn't just the grinders of the world who knew what was going on. You know, I had even most of my friends, while they knew I was at DraftKings, a lot of them just never stayed in season long. But now I got them like hitting me up in our group me and stuff like, hey, you know, what's going on there? And it's like, that's how I knew like things were really blowing up at that point. Like, hey, did he really cheat and this and that? And like, you know, it's funny with the inside information, like, you know, with the percentages, those guys still have to, you know, perform. It's not like Tom Brady, you know, called Ethan, was like, dude, I'm going to do six QB sneaks from the one, watch out.
Right.
Look, I get having those numbers is an advantage, but I think that was, you know, so innocent. And it just, Had he finished third, I don't think this, you know, nothing happens, I don't think. But it's because he won and because of what happened. I remember just being the worst that came out of it. And this was more of a selfish reason. Like, we could no longer play on sites anymore. And there were some people who left the company because they were making more playing on the side than they were at DraftKings or at FanDuel or whatever. Mirage, I think, was one of them. I don't know if he left right away, but you know, he left at one point to go pursue professionally because he was just, you know, it was cutting off, you know, all this money from him. It was a crazy week though, for sure.
Which is like, and that is like long standing stuff. Like I've had to deal with that of like, you know, thinking about, you know, taking this job or like thinking about like my own future and being like weighing it. Like, you know, if I took a job on the operator side, like I remember there was a job posting for like on the tech side of DK, like working on like salaries, like working on the algorithm. And I was talking about it with Kitchen once and he was like, cause I had, this would have been at the end of 2018 the company I was working for like shut down. And I was like thinking about what I wanted to do. And one of the jobs was a DK job posting and it was like remote work. And I obviously would have been qualified, but I was like, I don't even if DFS is not like a huge part of my income, which some years it has been and some years it has not been. But yeah. The idea of not being able to play was like so distasteful to me. It's like, I don't want to live in a world where I can't do this recreational activity that I've been doing for years.
And to DraftKings, and I assume FanDuel does this too, but I don't know for sure. Like DraftKings now has shadow contests for employees.
Employees. FanDuel does that too.
Yeah. You'll see, for those who don't know, you know, you'll see a contest, a regular contest, say $3, that's 20K, you know, GPP, that's 5K to first. And on, you know, you'll play in the shadow contest, you'll buy in and everything else. And say I put like a 200 score up in football. If that 200 score finishes in fourth in the real contest, I would get paid out what that actual value was. So, you know, I certainly think that helped a lot. Obviously, there's no millionaire maker. That would be crazy.
Right. That'd
but
be
I think
insane.
We did a lot for people to, you know, stay engaged and not jump, you know, to a different job just so they can play. I think they did a good job of that. And, you know, like you said, FanDuel, you think has that too. I think that was smart of them to do.
Yeah. Cause you want people to care about the product. Like you want people to stay engaged. Like if you can't, if you're not have like a feel of the salaries and yeah, like no, how the games work.
Yeah, it's important for especially the salary people, the customer support people to have like these bad beats or the VIP team. Like you obviously want the, you know, when you're talking about sports betting or DFS, like you don't want to just, when someone's complaining to you about a bad beat, you want to know exactly what they're talking. You know, you want to be like, oh, I didn't check. I didn't see the highlights of that. Like you want someone to be like, dude, that happened to me too. That was awful.
Yeah, like exactly. So I want to talk a little bit about the soccer product. Cause it's had all these different iterations. I know that you were big in doing it. So I get when would have like the 2015 Premier League season after. So it would have been after the World Cup and after the Draft Street acquisition is when DraftKings launched the soccer product.
Yeah. No, that's right. They launched the soccer product then. We wanted. So Draft Street had the World Cup in 2014.
14. Yeah.
Was the World Cup then that year? 20, maybe mm-hmm. 20, whatever it was.
Maybe it was 2016.
No, it would be 2014, 2018, 2022. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they had the World Cup, myself, a guy by the name of Chris Mazzone, who's a big guy in the space for a while.
Yeah, I know Chris.
One of the founders of DraftKings, Mark Narenberg, who's now crushing it at Simple Bet. You know, the three of us pretty much ran that product. You know, doing, you know, I was not the tech guy, I was doing the salaries literally out of my head. There's an algorithm, but I would literally write all the salaries out of my head. And actually, while I did salaries for I think probably 2+ years at DraftKings, you know, 2015, 2016, maybe a little 2017 before they started like, you know, actually hiring for that role, all the salaries were literally things just because I watched the games and I as Levitan would say, right, team watch the games,
team watch the games,
you know, I would make the salaries on based on what I saw. And you know, from what I know, people say the salaries were never better, so you know, I take credit for
that's true. That's true. I will back that up.
But yeah, you know, look, there's some very smart people at DraftKings. The guy who runs the DFS product, Charlie Gershmanu, one of the first guys there, like him and I, it was a good friend of mine. Him and I would clash all the time about soccer. And, you know, mine was more like, I don't want to say betting with my heart, but I was like, I think this is a product that where if we put some money behind it, it's going to grow. Like I have this feeling. And the problem with, maybe not problem with DraftKings is, but they're very big on analytics. They don't want to hear what your heart has to say or what, you know, what you think is going to happen. And, you know, no one is willing to lose their, I don't say lose their job because that probably sounds threatening, but I don't think anyone's willing to lose their job because they oversized a DraftKings soccer contest. You can oversize football all day and, you know, use that as a marketing expense, right? It's not going to happen at DraftKings for soccer. I think at this point, you know, everyone is bought into that. Like, just, you know, it's going to grow. It has a little bit of growth, but it's not, you know, unless something happens to where, you know, Liverpool buys into DraftKings and they're like, we want every contest to be X and Y. It's not going to happen. You know, all the growth I feel like we've seen from soccer is completely organic. There's been not really much.
It's when it's on during the day. It's the European championships or things like that.
Champions League, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, soccer has such a, and I really, and, you know, obviously I'm preaching to the choir here, but soccer, and you've had, you know, Pew Pew on before, who's the man in soccer. Soccer's biggest selling point, besides the fact those Tuesday, Wednesday Champions League slates are literally perfect. Like 2:45 slate, six games, all that finish in 105 minutes. Like that is
so good.
There's no sweat like that anywhere else. They even give you a 15-minute break in there to go to the bathroom. It's just, there's nothing better. And I felt like it was such a missed opportunity. Not, you know, you don't have to sell the 10 a.m. EPL slate before college football. I mean, I love the EPL and the 10 a.m., but I get it. A Saturday leading into college football, which is bigger in America, I get it. But the Tuesday, Wednesday Champions League, they could have really blown that up. And, you know, they're still sizable, but it's compared to literally everything else, it stinks.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, every once in a while they'll do 100K to first. Normally it's like 20K to first or whatever, which like for me, that's fine. Cause like, MMEing soccer, it's like a whole thing. Like I prefer to just build a couple teams. Like it works for me, you know, for guys like Sean and like Pew and like Alex, like it's, you know, it's a little bit different for them. 100K to first would suit like what they were looking for a little bit better. But I just have always been curious about, so for, again, for those who don't know, it started out as 8-man rosters, right? 2 forwards, 2 midfielders, 2 defenders, goalkeeper, and a utility.
Yeah.
Then they did this huge switch, and I don't remember the exact time frame, but I think maybe the 2017 EPL season is when this happened. Then it switched to 11-man rosters and the scoring changed.
Yeah.
And the scoring change has stayed where stats acquired from like dead ball situations, so like corner kicks, free kicks, and things like that, they used to not count. Like a cross generated from that used to not count. A shot generated from that would only count if it was on net. Like if, you know, Andrea Pirlo stands over a dead ball, if he fires it over the bar, you don't get the point. If the goalkeeper happens to save it, you do get the point. And my guess would be that the analytics inside DK was like the 11-man rosters with full points for a cross and things like that. Noobs were just getting crushed and it was hurting contest filling.
100%. They were getting smoked. It's also, you know, filling out a roster of 11, you know, you and I could do that easy. You know, your normal NFL player who's up playing in a soccer contest, you know, it's hard enough for them to fill out 8 men, but they might know 4 of them. Now you're asking them to fill out 11, where they're now just guessing on, you know, the random Brazilian name that they want to throw in. They were getting smoked. 11 versus 8 makes it harder for, you know, maxing out your entries. Obviously, if you have an optimizer, that's easier. But if you're building, say you build 5 by hand, you're not, you know, you're, or you build by 20 by hand, it takes so much longer to build 11 versus 8.
Sure.
So they were seeing, you know, people play less. The analytics suggested people were getting smoked, like your fish and your non-sharks were getting absolutely smoked. We also, you know, we started with Stats as the stat provider.
Right. And then switched to Opta.
Crapped all over them. They were actually awful, like really bad. And went to Opta. And then people were like, Opta stinks. Go back to someone else. They think it's just one of those things. I also think soccer is one of the Soccer, when you watch a pro NFL game, you know what a completion is for the most part. If it's ruled a completion on the field, it's a completion, right? You know what a touchdown is. In soccer, you don't know for sure what a cross is. Like, there's no guarantee that ball into the box is going to be a cross. There's no guarantee what looks like a cross that could be a shot on goal if the goalie, if it looked like maybe it was on goal. There's a lot of stuff up in the air still to this point to make soccer a little bit trickier. But you're certainly right that, they went from 8 to 11 and then back to 8 because people were just getting absolutely smoked and just wiped out. And we're never coming back to play soccer again.
Yeah. Which is, I wish that there was a way for it to happen. Cause that it really, it was the best. Like that was my favorite DFS product that ever exist was the 11 man DraftKings soccer format with like all the scoring, but you actually did just hit on something that we haven't talked about yet, which is the stat provider stuff, because that you're in football and baseball, that stuff tends to be like a home run is a home run, right? A touchdown is a touchdown. But even you get this in basketball, like, oh, that was a block and it actually was not counted as a block.
Assist. Yeah. Like assist. He passed it to him. He took 7 dribbles. How did he get an assist?
Yeah. And you'll see discrepancies in data providers, depending on which data provider, which places, different places score it different ways, but the soccer stuff, it is wild. Like some stadiums will count across as a, like, if the optic cameras are set up.
The amount of people. So at this point, and for the most part, I was, running or on the VIP team. I was doing soccer purely as like a passion project. Cause I wanted it to grow, but you would have people, not only just saying like, hey, that was should have been an assist or whatever. They would send in 7 different videos of different angles of why it's an assist. And, look, to DraftKings credit, supports credit, they would forward that on to Opta or whoever it was and be like, why isn't this an assist? Like, what's going on here? And, sometimes you don't get an answer. Sometimes you would, but there's, it's just one of those things where people are getting videos from all of these like crazy feeds, like breaking it down with, graphics and everything else. Like they have the Telestrator, never seen anything like it. It was really, a crazy time. I'm sure it still is every now and then with this stuff. But certainly in the heyday of soccer back then, I think, the one thing we were talking about, the sizing of soccer, and I wanted to, my whole thing was, I would always push for, if the contest is $100,000 GPP, as long as it breaks even, the next day they should run that contest. That was my whole thing. If it breaks even, run it again. Even if it only makes $1, run it again. And if it loses money, and I'm sure you and I had these conversations. If it loses money, I have no problem if the contest gets smaller. I would never argue against that. My whole thing that was frustrating, and it was frustrating for, all the guys I would talk to, man, they made X on the last soccer slate. Why did the GPP go from 100 to 75? Like it's just like a rough thing to swallow. That doesn't happen in other sports. And again, there are people much smarter than me running the analytics of why things are but optically it left a bad taste in my mouth. And like, talking to you and Sean and everyone else, it would just be like, I pushed for it, but like, there's nothing I can do about it. They don't, for these reasons, they think they shouldn't run it again tomorrow. And that was the problem. Like no other sport, maybe there's esports and things like that, but no other of the big sports are treated that way.
Yeah. Okay. Payout structures. That's a good one. I mean, that's a huge war inside of DFS because a year over year, the payout structures have gotten more and more top heavy, like 10th to like 10th place in the millionaire maker getting like, $3,000 or whatever. I assume that this is basically just a marketing tool and that everything on DraftKings analytics side is like, doesn't impact fill rates at all. Yeah. Really, if anything, it makes the contest a little bit softer because the pros are not max entering them. Like I assume that everything on their side says the move.
Everything you're saying is right. There's nothing that ever suggests them, these top heavy contests, everything you're saying is right. Everything that they're seeing suggests, like I said, like they're almost easier contests. There's also, people want to play for that lottery ticket. They don't care that ninth place is only $100 and first place is $1,000,000. They don't care that they don't care that ninth place should really be 10K. And it's one of those same thing with like when rake would be raised. And, I talked to my friends who are all fish and they play $20 a weekend and they'd say, oh, I saw on RotoGrinders they raised Rake. Like, what does that mean for me? Like, do I not in the Millionaire Maker, if I win, do I not get $1 million? It's like, no, you do. And then it'd be like, why do I care then? Like, that's what it's been. The people in general don't, first of all, don't know much about the Rake, don't care. Payout structures, they're looking at first place. They don't care what eighth place, they don't care about the drop for the most part. The people you see complaining, you know, is a very small minority, and that's really what it is. You know, we ran, you know, contests. I invented some contests. I don't even remember. It's called the Super Sweat, where every single payout spot was a little bit different than the one prior. So like if the min cash was 20, the second to last place was like $23, then $28, and going up from there. And like that filled at the same rate as everything else. And maybe like that payout structure doesn't work either. But even when you see the, you know, the two times payout, you know, on the bottom, or you see where it's super spread out, it's not like those contests fill all that much faster. They fill
differently
the same rate as everyone else. And that's the thing. It's kind of like if they saw such a big move where like these contests were, they kind of keep reposting them, they would change their mind, I think. But because they don't, and people want that lottery ticket, you know, that nothing will change.
Yeah. I mean, it is, and I guess, you know, it's very hard to say, like the DFS product is just not the focus for DK or FanDuel anymore. Like it matters as a customer acquisition tool, but that's what it matters as. Like DFS is kind of viewed as a customer acquisition tool for the sports books. And like, you know, when sports betting and is legal in all 50 states, and DK and FanDuel have a sports book at, you know, in every state, like, you know, I don't know what the future of DFS is at that point. Like, does it even make sense to keep running it, to dedicate all of these resources to it? Like,
yeah, I mean, I still think there's always going to be that appetite, like I said, for that lottery ticket. Like the Millionaire Maker will always be there. There's, because people want, you can't, it's pretty hard to win $1 million off $20 sports betting.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, you can flip that 20 to something else, but that Millionaire Maker is, you know, every Sunday that chance is going to be there. And I think there's always going to be that appetite. Maybe like when it's legal in 45 states, things will start getting smaller, but I think stuff like the Millionaire Maker, or at least certainly the headliner GPPs are, I think they're always going to be there. I think that appetite's always going to be there. You know, but we'll see. You know, it's crazy that you see the contests that are still there, seemingly everything's still growing. Maybe not as crazy as it once was, but you know, you see, what does DraftKings have, 2 Millionaire Makers week one? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. I think a $5 one and a $100 one, which I actually like that. Like because the $100 one has a little bit better of a payout structure for the people who care about it. And for the people who have the money to throw in $15,000 to max enter it. And the $5 one is just a total scratch off lotto, which makes sense for that grouping of people, right? Like because that's all they care about. They want to win the $1 million, and getting seventh place is like whatever for them.
That's like, okay, cool. I won $1,000. Like then I think then they're happy that they won their $1,000 or whatever. And they're not, you know, they're not upset. Like, oh, this should have really been 15. It's the people, you know, the people who do care about that are not the majority of the people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. One thing I'm really fascinated with is like peer-to-peer sports betting. Like I think Betfair is the exchange that offers that now, which is not legal here in the United States. But like that is the form of sports betting that is most interesting to me. But obviously not as interesting to DK and FanDuel and MGM and you know, points bet or whatever, because that it's not as profitable. But that is like what I am most excited for eventually coming to the States.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at sports betting, you know, for the most part, obviously there's been technological advancements, so things have changed a little, but you know, you still see the same stuff that people, you know, like if our grandparents were sports betting, you still see the same Patriots minus -7. There hasn't been that much innovation. You know, like I said, there's been technological stuff. So like in-game betting is a big deal now. But I still think that next wave is gonna, something new is coming, and the sport, you know, sports exchange will be, I think will be big. And there's probably things we haven't even thought of yet. I hate like saying that, like we're in the second inning of sports betting in America, but I think it's true. Like it's
totally
so early on. I just need to hear a different saying. I just see like that disruptors. I just need new words. I can't with that stuff anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, whatever sports betting ends up becoming in the States, like, there are, like, you know, there are new avenues and things that have not even been thought of yet that will come that, you know, are all very exciting. Okay, you're in on So Rare, right?
I'm in on, yeah, I'm not as, like, high on it as, like, Andrew Laird is and Sean, but, like,
right.
I'm in on it, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, for me, it's, like, the most obvious thing ever. Like, of course I should be in on this. It's like all the things I love. It's gambling. It's fantasy. It is crypto, right? It's like, fantasy soccer. I haven't done it yet. Like, it feels like a real character flaw of me to have not been in on it.
I mean, my whole thing is the barrier to entry. You have to spend some money, which I don't think is a great...
Sure.
You know, that's a hard enough barrier to entry. You know, there's, you know, my whole thing was early on, they give you, you can draft a team, or you open packs of cards and they give you players. And, you know, if you're given a goalie and he's hurt, like, you have to go pay for your own goalie. Like, that's one of the things that I kind of turned me off. There's no way to, like, really play for free. I think you get like 10 free weeks, and things could have changed because I don't play for free anymore, but you get like 10 free weeks, and then, like, you have to start paying for players. I think that's, I don't want to say it's holding it back, because they're obviously doing very well, but they need to come up with more of this, like, free to play aspect to get people in. You know, I think it's really cool. But like I said, I'm not in on it as much. I think I've also just had a bad experience. All my guys keep getting hurt, so it's not as fun
hurt
for me. I paid for the Jeff Atanella, who's the Portland Timbers goalie, and the first game he played, he, like, tore something in his abdomen or something. He's gone for the year. So that was like $500. That's just sit. That's done. It's cool. It's fun to track. You know, I have a lot of Shakhtar Donetsk players, so I'm waiting for UCL to come back. So those will be my boys. But it's, you know, yeah, it's shocking that you're not into it, to be honest.
Yeah. And which really, honestly, it's because, like, you know, taking all my ETH off of a cold wallet set, which, like, I think you can use your credit card, but, like,
yeah, you can.
So to me, it's so weird how the human brain works and does, like, sunk cost fallacy and everything. Cause obviously there's, like, nothing wrong with that, but I'm like, I already have all of this ETH. Yeah. Like, I feel like I should just use the ETH I already have, as opposed to, like, buying more and dedicating more US dollars to it. And then, and obviously, of course, I could just do that and it would not be that difficult. But the game is not complicated, but also it's not like setting your lineup for, like, FPL or whatever. Like, there's a little bit more you kind of have to figure out. But that is, like, kind of a project for me to look into over the next week. I've really wanting them to do it, but I'm super excited. Like, I think we are going to be in for hopefully a very interesting year of soccer. I mean, we're like, what, 500 days away from the next World Cup.
Yep.
You know, if that ends up happening, I don't know. And I am hoping that Manchester City does not completely run away with the EPL.
Have you seen, by the way, I mean, this is putting the cart way before the horse here, but US is down to 65-1 now for the World Cup. They were 150-1 about 8 weeks ago. People are buying into their Nations Cup win and their Gold Cup wins, I guess. I don't know. It's just crazy that, you know, I thought the 2026 World Cup, when it's here in America and when everybody's in their prime, like, they're probably going to be a top seven favorite. Now, I'm not saying they're top seven in the world, but just based on where the games are and everything else, I think they'll, betting wise, they'll be like 13-1 or something. It's just crazy that people are kind of buying in now. They're down to 60-1 already before they've even qualified.
Yeah. I mean, it is like, for the first time that, you know, I'm 28, for the first time I can remember, the 11 players for, like, theoretically the 11 starters are all in Europe, which I don't think that's ever been the case before.
And it's not like, and this is, it's not to shit on, you know, Tim Howard and Clint Dempsey, who were awesome. But, like, Clint Dempsey was at Fulham. Tim Howard was at, where, you know, my team, Everton. Like,
Everton,
they're not, like, starting midfielder for Chelsea or starting right back for Barca or midfielder for... It's like, you look at the attack for Juventus and Weston McKennie's just sitting in the middle of that attack. It's, like, mind-blowing that all of these American players are starting for, like, big-time teams. It's really crazy. And you've got, you know, the funnel from Red Bull Salzburg into Red Bull Leipzig. It's really cool. You know, people start, I have friends that are like, you know, very light soccer fans and, you know, be like, who besides Pulisic is going to be, you know, and like, and I sure you just name the teams these guys are starting on. It's never been like that ever. It's really, it's fun to see.
Yeah. I mean, it, and like, you know, the, like Christian Pulisic is like actually amazing. Like, it's not like, this is not like an American media thing where we're like really focused on this guy because he is from the United States. Like, he actually is that incredible.
Yeah, like, you have him and like Gio Reyna. Big time players. It's not like, you know, when Michael Bradley went to go play in Rome and it was like, that's cool. Like, he's starting for a Serie A team, but everyone knew like he's still Michael Bradley. Like, he's still like this very good MLS player, decent Serie A player. You have players that are legit, like awesome, starting for these fun teams.
Yeah, I mean, I hope the 2022 World Cup gets figured out. I also hope they don't play it in Qatar. I hope they do something else. I hope they end up just playing it in Europe or something. Like, I feel like it's just a joke that it's actually happening in Qatar. Yeah. Not ideal.
No.
All right. Well, there we go. That was we covered all the stuff that that I wanted to talk about. Any pressing issues in the world of DFS or sports betting that you've been wanting to bring to a wider audience?
No, I don't think anything pressing. I'll just quickly say what I'm doing these days. We haven't launched yet or anything, but I'm part of this company called BetHouse that we're gonna focus on next play wagering and instant play gratification, kind of be the slot machine of sports betting, you know, where you're betting on, will the next pass by Tom Brady go over 12 yards? Maybe, you know, who will catch it? Things like that. You know, hopefully that's some of the innovation that we're lacking. I think that could be a lot of fun. I don't think we'd be like a competitor to like the FanDuels of the world.
That's a new thing. That's a new thing.
And it's also like, I think FanDuel, DraftKings, whoever, you log on to their site, you're always going to see the traditional betting lines first. If you want to go make a bet on, you know, the next play, I think you got to, you know, 5 or 6 clicks. I think ideally what we're going to do is try to flip that. And, you know, you'll see the next play stuff first. If you want to go bet on the full game, you got to make some clicks. So we're hoping to be like an accompaniment app. You know, you have a sport like baseball where the average male age is like 45 years old, which is mind blowing that like, that's it. Like every other sport's a male, the average age watching is like 20 something. I think, you know, a sport like that could, baseball could use a boost if you're having people engage with different at bats and things like that. It could be fun. So I'm hoping that's the innovation that we're lacking. Maybe there's something even more crazy coming, but that's where my focus is these days.
Yeah. I mean, I am all on board for any and all innovations in sports betting that makes things more accessible, easier, like, and that keeps people engaged with the games. Cause like that, you know, that benefits everyone to have people more actively engaged. Like that generates takes for people like me, that generates clicks, that generates, you know, views, that generates ratings.
You can come up with a take for anything though. I feel like you don't need any extra, you know, ammo. I feel like anything you're watching, you can come up with some kind of take.
True. I am the take master. That is my job. That's my role that I have slotted in. So everyone, you can follow Matt on Twitter. I think you're just at Matt Birnbach.
Yeah, and keep it simple.
Yeah, you can bother him. You know, if Sofiane Fagouli has a miscredited assist, you can send him the video.
I still to this point, people will tag me and things, and it's just like, I'm not there for 2 years, guys. And people
not that,
like,
not that
some
guy.
People, Sean will do it or someone will do it, you know, purely to be funny. But there are some people just don't even pay attention. They're just still at me on things. So it's funny.
Yeah. All right, everyone, follow Matt on Twitter. Maybe we'll have him back on the show when they get the product launch and we can go into how it works. And we'll be back next week.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.